You're listening to the Ruby on Rails podcast.
Happy Wednesday and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Elise Schaefer, and I use she, her pronouns. We all love Ruby on Rails. You may remember that my very first episode on this show was to talk about whether Rails was still relevant. In the last few years, there's been so many exciting things coming to Ruby on Rails. And I've felt that excitement in the community. I felt it at conferences and in my conversations with many of you. Today, we're going to talk about how we can all share that excitement and be better evangelists for Rails. Today's guest is Irina Nazarova, who uses she, her pronouns. Irina is the CEO at Evil Martians and a co-founder at Anycable. She started her career as a C++ engineer and investment bank analyst, moved on to start two startups, building one of them on Rails, and finally joined Evil Martians as a manager in 2017. Irina recently moved to San Francisco, where she's been exploring tech meetups, hiking trails, and coffee spots. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Liz.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you on the show. I was at RailsConf and I saw your keynote, and we have like exchanged emails in the past because you helped get Vlad on the show to talk about his book. So it's awesome to get to talk to you. Your keynote at Rails really spoke to me in a, like, maybe it's being a little dramatic to say profound way, but it really just struck a chord. So I thought maybe we could start with the keynote and you could talk about the message that you were trying to send to Rails developers in that keynote.
Yeah. So what I found out is, first of all, Rails is very much relevant today. Rails is the most productive way to build a CRUD web application for a huge number of engineers. And again, I'm not saying it's one solution for all, but what I found out while also kind of at Evil Martians, working with in different stacks with different startups, working in Rust and Node.js, Go, of course, we found out that in terms of productivity of building a web application, Ruby on Rails is the best framework. And there's some inefficiency in people not considering Rails for their new web applications. And I'm going to say, first of all, yes, this is happening, but at the same time, the opposite is happening. People are choosing Rails for pragmatic reasons. This was the core, I think, of the talk, is talk about people and companies choosing Rails for pragmatic reasons in recent years, in 2021, 22, 23, and 24. And the magical part was this company, FlexCar, that was switching from Java microservices to Rails in 2024. So I found some really interesting examples, but the core was just kind of seeing that if we are being honest and kind of pragmatic, intellectually honest, I mean, we should be considering Rails for building new web applications and new CRUD web applications. And people do that. It's just that something's missing. And I was trying to figure out, okay, what's missing then? If this is the case, then what's missing? And then the second part of the talk is about that. And the first point was just us not being loud enough evangelizing for Rails and telling the stories of building with Rails. We became so much quieter about building with Rails and building with Ruby. And this is part of the problem.
Yeah, I think that this is a big shift that I think it's happening now. We're seeing people get louder about Rails. Like, I've seen new Rails specific YouTube channels in the last couple of years, right? Like, we're seeing people not only use Rails, but also be pretty loud about using Rails. And I think that was the part of your keynote that I resonated with, because I feel like I love Rails so much. I feel like it's such a practical framework to use. It matches a lot of the way my brain works. And so I think the louder that we can be to tell people, like, yes, we're building with Rails, is important. And that was a kind of a major part of your keynote that just like really, really resonated with me.
I think my point was, let's keep it going. It's like we started, it's amazing. It's already kind of winning people over, but we should keep going, keep being loud, keep involving more people and sort of re-engaging more people and bringing new people. And then you will see how things will change. You will see many more new businesses, many more, because the reason is once they try it, they love it.
I think that there's an interesting thing too around the startups that are choosing Rails, choosing to start new projects with Rails.
FlexCar is one of them. WAP.com is another.
those stories are so inspiring too, because it's almost always a bad choice to like completely start over with a new framework. In most scenarios, you have to have a pretty significant reason to switch. And their story was kind of inspiring because they did this thing that most people would advise you probably not to do. Maybe the more pragmatic answer might have been to reach for, you know, JavaScript or something like Node or something like that. And they picked Rails and they liked it. And they found that it was so much easier and faster for them to build and just easier and more pragmatic for them. And that someone essentially pivoted their whole business away from Java microservices to a Rails monolith is like a fascinating story.
That's fascinating. And it's a bit extreme. I agree with you. I didn't expect it either. I also feel it's a little bit maybe too extreme to be switching the whole set of like 30 or something microservices. But there was another story, Kraftwerk. They switched from Next.js with tRPC to Rails after, I think, 3 months of building. So for 3 months, they've been building in JavaScript TypeScript stack. And they realized there's so much to build because they had to build a lot of integrations and stuff. They're just not going to be able to do it in this JS TypeScript stack. And this is when they switched to Rails, and I think this is also a great story of when I think about myself choosing Rails back in 2014, it was on the top of popularity. It's natural for people to reach for something that is popular. The question is it going to be sufficient, right, moving forward? And I'm not saying 100% of people should use Rails. No, but what I'm saying is you got to consider this option, which is the best option for very huge amount of engineers.
Just in terms of trying to be louder and be better evangelists for Rails and to talk about the things that we're building, how do you think we can be better evangelists? What can we do?
I'm thinking about this a lot. So I think now at this stage, it's great to be engaging with the local communities. So this is what we are seeing already at rubyconferences.org. We are seeing a bunch of meetups all around the world, everywhere in different parts of the world. And I'm running a San Francisco Ruby meetup. Now we had 5 meetups. And so I'm talking from my own experience, of course. It's great to be able to connect with people, connect with engineers and companies building with Rails. In San Francisco, many of them looking for jobs at startups or higher level jobs at bigger, at larger companies. So it's different people, different goals, but I think there's a lot of value in connecting those people together and learning from each other. So I think running a local community is something really useful and really powerful. And the reason, let me give you much more context, there are actually so many Ruby on Rails companies that are very quiet and you wouldn't know about them. And kind of engaging and bringing them in is important for the community. It's important for us to see, oh, I have this, for example, I'm even embarrassed to say it, but I just learned several weeks ago that Chime.com, which is a Chime banking app, is a Ruby on Rails company. It's my whole, you could say, like half of my career in Rails, and I didn't know that. And they are planning an IPO next year, and they are knowing all those lists of all the companies to IPO next year. Of course, Stripe is there. It's been there on all those lists for years, but also a Ruby company. What I'm trying to say is there's so many companies that are building with Rails, and they are hiring. They are open to being with the community, engaging with the community. Somebody needs to make the first step, and I wrote to Chime. So apparently Noel Rapin is leading the Ruby team inside of Chime.
Oh, awesome.
And now we are actually planning a meetup. They're going to host one of the future meetups.
That's awesome.
And it happened just because of one LinkedIn direct message. So something like that, or an email. So this is one side is companies and the other side is people and engineers and authors of open source. So for example, I actually just reached out to Andrew Kane, who is apparently based in San Francisco, and he's building so much open source. And I think he wasn't attending the meetups. I'm not sure, but you know, this is what I'm trying to say. As an organizer of the meetup, you can be inviting people and companies in and kind of unlocking value, because people will see that, oh, this company is building with Rails. And this is important for Rubyists, for existing Rubyists, for new people who are just interested in Ruby. It's important for them to see that, or these amazing companies, I don't know, Figma or Coinbase, Instacart, you probably know many of those names, but it's not like we have the full awareness of the Ruby companies.
This was something that kind of surprised me when I was in a job search late last year and then early this year. And when I was interviewing, I was kind of surprised at the number of like startups that I interviewed at that were Ruby on Rails companies. And that to me was kind of a indicator of this thing that I had felt inside about like there's energy and excitement around Rails right now. And sometimes you can maybe feel that and you don't have like an external like validation. But I think one of the external validations for it is like seeing a bunch of companies who are choosing Rails. And these are companies that like weren't necessarily being loud about it. They had just picked it. They picked it because it was a good fit for what they were trying to do. One of the things that I think people have said is that Rails is niche, but I think if you look at the companies, I don't think Rails is niche. I think Rails fits a large array of use cases and a large array of industries. And I think there's a lot of growth happening there. So I'm curious about your thoughts on that and just like that framing.
So we just had this Ruby at YC, Ruby at Y Combinator meetup. So it was a Ruby meetup in San Francisco at the office headquarters of Y Combinator, which is the most famous probably startup accelerator investor program. And the partner of YC told the story of essentially how Rails and Y Combinator like started at approximately the same time. And already in 2006, 90% of the batch were building with Rails. So kind of super early. And of course, it's not the case. You cannot say today that 90% of the batch are building with Rails. And I'm going to say, I think that Next.js is becoming this go-to framework for almost like proof of concept type of things, like very, very scrappy first iterations, just completely fine, I guess. But question is, can you keep going with that? So my point is, so many companies are successful already building with Rails. They are all around. And startups that are kind of beyond the initial stage, beyond the initial iteration, there are also many of them are building with Rails. I'm not trying to say it's like the most popular framework out there. Clearly, that's not true. But I agree with you that, first of all, it is a major web framework. It's powering very successful organizations, very successful products, and more products than we know about. And it's not niche. Like if the niche is a web application or a successful web business, it's huge.
Yeah, I think that there's another component of Rails that I think it's even a good thing to reach for in those sort of early scrappy months of figuring stuff out, right? I think it's even good there. One of the things I know DHH has talked about this, there's been like a lot of people talking about it on Rails Core around Rails is striving to be the one person framework, right? Like they want to be a framework where one person could build a product. I guess I'm curious what part that plays in how we build evangelism even outside of our community.
I got to say, my angle is at Rails is a bit different. I'm not looking at it as one person framework, although I understand the premise. The thing is, statistically, an engineer today is not a Ruby engineer. It's a JavaScript engineer or a Python engineer. So this is one problem. So this like one person thing is often a JavaScript engineer. My angle is startups. I've never worked in big tech. I have no idea what's going on there. And I'm not working with one person products a lot. So my angle is very specific. But I'm seeing the benefits of Rails and how it's designed in collaboration. Okay, frankly, Next.js is how, in my opinion, poorly designed the framework is. I mean, the separation between client code, server code, and kind of just separation of concerns and Rails and like in bigger, it's not just MVC, it's MVC and like developer productivity around those abstraction, like layers of abstraction. They way they kind of come into light for me, especially in Teams, when you sort of don't have to invent the bicycle every single time, like you often have to in other stacks. And everybody is, when you have a team and the team on the team, everybody is inventing their own bicycle. It's actually becoming a real nightmare. It's not a joke. It's like really hard, right? I don't know if you guys seen it, but Rails gives you this clarity and separation of your layers of abstractions that are very important for productive teamwork and for growing the product. So it's not just one person framework. It's one person to IPO. So it's growing from that into something else. And I agree, even one person can get lost in poorly designed applications and in poorly designed frameworks. But especially when it's the team, it's when you see the benefits of just great design of Rails.
I definitely resonate with what you're saying around a lot of the decisions in Rails and the fact that a lot of decisions are made for you and you have these sort of like conventions that you can rely on. It allows you to kind of offload those concerns to the framework. You can think about the thing that you actually want to do, which is probably, you know, updating a document or changing client record or something like that. And you can focus on those concerns instead of focusing on how am I going to configure my database or whatever, right?
Yeah, database, everything about database migrations is so clear, so straightforward, so well thought through. And there's such kind of clear tools and conventions that we tend to take for granted. But try building a new app with Rust. You'll see the difference.
This was one of the things that made learning, like learning React, I had to try to learn it like 3 or 4 times. And it was only after I went and learned Vue first that I was able to come back and like understand React. And I think the only reason that was is that Vue had a kind of similar thing to Rails. It was a little bit different in that they weren't necessarily making all of the decisions for you, but they just had a lot of stuff. They had state management. They had all these things. And I definitely think that that is a superpower in Rails that you can, like anyone who joins a Rails project can pretty easily understand where things are generally, right? Like, you know where the models are, you know how migrations are going to work, you know how controllers work, you know how, where your background jobs are going to live. Like, you don't have to come up to speed on the tech as much as you do the business context, which is generally the more important thing to come up to speed on.
Yeah, absolutely. And the business logic is where you want to dedicate your time to, right? And dedicate your decision-making power, you know, focus to that. So this is, I think, what people mostly mean when they say one-person framework. This is great for spinning up new things, new applications. So by the way, as an example, we have Anycable, and Anycable is a Go server, right? It's a very efficient, memory-efficient WebSocket infrastructure that is kind of replacing ActionCable. But when we were building managed Anycable, and this is a web CRUD application, this is not a server-side thing, it's a web application, we chose Rails, Rails full stack, we use Flex, we use Flex UI kit. Like, it's just helping you spin it up super quickly, super efficiently, and yeah, you have it all working in like 2 weeks of work. And you don't have to use all the third-party user management authentication. This is what's like mind-blowing for me in JS ecosystem, that you're using third-party services for basic framework components instead of gems and like open source libraries like we do in Rails ecosystem. So for me, the ecosystem in Rails is better. I will say React has JS frameworks has a use case. It's just not for everything. You just have to be pragmatic about it, right? There is a use case. If it's like a super complicated, complex data structure on the front end, you know, React was originally built for Facebook Ads Manager. And Ads Manager is just crazy. It has charts. It has like, I don't know, 100 different inputs that you can tweak. And every input is kind of affecting everything else on that screen. You won't want to build this with Rails full stack, I guess. Although you can, right, with TurboMorph. But still, there is a reason to have this kind of front-end centric data structure, state manager. and update from that side. And there's all the other cases where when you don't need it. And yeah, it's great to be able to build with just plain like Rails without React.
I mean, I definitely agree with you. I think I like Turbo, I like Stimulus, and I like that kind of tooling. I have worked at quite a few companies that have used React. And I think in a lot of cases, it can make sense, especially when you, like, I'm not familiar with Ads Manager, but I can see a use case. Like, I could see a use case in, like, my most hated online portal is the AWS console. But I imagine just based on how busy it is and how much, like, when you're looking at CloudWatch, you've got all these different graphs for all these different metrics and all these different things. Like, I imagine doing that on a server rendered page, it's doable, but it might not be as performant as being like, oh, I can just refresh this thing on this one component. So I agree with you. I think all of these tools have their place. I am curious, you know, we've talked a little bit about just like exciting things happening in Rails. Is there something that's excited you recently in Rails, or maybe something that you're looking forward to that has you excited about Rails?
Actually, a lot of things, and a lot of things are related to the kind of present use of the AI, LLMs, etc. So when YC kind of agreed to host the meetup, I proposed to them a bunch of speakers that I knew from YC, from San Francisco, and Building with Rails. So I ran this filter in my head and I submitted the output to them, this kind of query. But they opened a call for proposals and internally at YC, and a bunch of proposals were about ML. So people submitted, like the founders submitted proposals about two things, ML and Hotwire. And this kind of matches what I am excited about as well. So specifically, I don't know what to call it. We call it AI-powered applications nowadays. I don't know. But I think there is a lot of potential in bringing the kind of vector search capabilities to more organically to Rails. Like there's this gem neighbor from Andrew Kane that is kind of integrating pgvector into Active Record, something like that. So you can like create a migration, create a data type vector, and store them, etc. So this is just a very common case nowadays, right? That you want to search something based on kind of similarity in broad sense. And there's a bunch of algorithms, et cetera, but essentially this kind of similarity search, which is vector search, which kind of requires its own infrastructure. And Postgres is great. pgvector is great. I think we're just getting started. So this is my feeling, right? It's not very common. Many people still reach for Python and they don't need Python. They're not training the models. They're not using PyTorch. And by the way, there are kind of bindings for many traditional ML libraries into Ruby, like C libraries into Ruby. But this is more theoretical for me. Like what's more practical is just kind of how we build this new experience around LLMs in Rails natively. I'm excited about this. So this is coming.
Yeah, I think this is interesting because earlier today I recorded an episode about how large language models are going to help us be better developers and how we can use them in the development process. And then that episode was with Landon Gray, and he also mentioned Andrew Kane in his answer. I have a question that I ask at the end. And in his answer to that, he mentioned Andrew Kane as someone who might be a good person to talk to about LLMs and ML and all of those kind of tools in the Ruby landscape. So I think it's interesting. I've got both of these today and we're talking about it. It's kind of fun.
The other thing is all about Hotwire and just the ecosystem around it. Like the UI gets the kind of, it's still kind of, I mean, you have to say it's still lagging behind the React ecosystem in terms of available components, sort of, maybe even headless components that have all the magic already implemented. I don't know, but you can style them.
There's a lot of these kinds of components, especially for like the JavaScript frameworks for like React and Vue, and I think Svelte probably has a bunch of them, where you just install this thing and then you get a bunch of components that are included in that pack. And this is a thing that I've like kind of wanted for, you know, server rendered Rails apps. Like I wanted something like that. So I think that's an interesting one.
So it kind of makes sense because you cannot expect Ruby engineers to be great at building UI components. So they want to reach for something that's already there and it's natural, et cetera, et cetera. But this is one reason we should keep building out this ecosystem. And I think it's coming. And also the other reason is, they put this, have you heard this generative UI? Imagine you have like some interface where you're saying what you want to do in the product, and this LLM or whatever, the UI is giving you the interactive components to solve your problem. This already exists, by the way. My favorite example is, I have a Bank of America app, which is very default banking app, right? And it has this thing, I say, pay my credit card. And it's showing me a bunch of interactive components. I say, this account, this date, pay now. I'm just kind of clicking buttons inside an LLM-powered flow chat. And I'm not saying it should be exactly chat. Chat is just one example. But the idea of kind of function calling, it's essentially you're saying something in natural language, or maybe it's not even language, by the way. It could be based on your behavior in the product, that it can guess what's your intention. It doesn't have to be a request. Ideally, I want system surround me to guess what I'm looking for, right? And it can then generate exactly the component, sort of the interactive element that you're looking for, that is kind of maximizing your experience. So in this case, you want the components, not the pages. So it's just one thought. But also something we've been super actively developing at Evil Martians is kind of tooling that is tying together Hotwire stack and React stack. So we've built a Turbo Mount. Turbo Mount allows you to mount a single React view or Svelte component into your Hotwire view.
Oh, wow. This is a problem that I had at a previous employer where we were trying to move to Hotwire for a lot of our stuff that had previously been in React. But part of that was that you couldn't just rebuild the whole thing. So what you would want to do is like try to mount portions of the React components inside of a Hotwire. This is exactly like I've wanted this thing that you're talking about.
And now, so we're also building a bunch of stuff for Inertia.js. Inertia becomes this kind of glue between Rails and React UI or Svelte. And like our recent release, we didn't talk about it much, but it was like bringing type generation. So we take serializers and we generate types. And this is all kind of instant in ID. You see that there is a mismatch between the serializer and the something like the fields you're using in React on the React side. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about this, about essentially helping Rails engineers be the most productive in Rails tech and bringing the React, Vue, Svelte, maybe Astra when needed. So you shouldn't be just kind of purist for me. You know, it's like, and I'm an economist, there's usually the right solution is a mixed strategist. The optimal solution in mixed strategist is usually better than without mixing. And sometimes you still want to reach for React, especially if you're competing with other React apps, and the product demands it, right? It's case by case. It's even view by view, like sort of feature by feature. And I'm just excited about making Rails engineers the most productive. And without this puristic view of, oh, we just want to build with Ruby and nothing else. This is also a bit too much, right? Let's build with Rails. Let's be most productive. Let's reach for other tools when needed. Yeah, and let's be successful and let's be loud about this.
Let's be very loud. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I have one final question that I ask. I've started asking all of my guests. What is a topic or who is a guest that you think we should have on the show?
Yeah, I think you should have a startup founder building with Rails. And that's also my commitment at SF Ruby Meetup. I'm trying to bring speakers from startups, in addition to speakers from just kind of community open source and big companies. Of course, people from startups, they are super busy building. They often cannot go to conferences because they are too busy building. They are still in this survival mode.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, if you can invite some of them to maybe one of them to a podcast and I can give you some ideas, that'd be great.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I have a bare note with a list of potential topics. I put it on there, so I will be sure to follow up on that. Thanks again for coming on the show. This was a great conversation, and I feel like it really helped energize me a lot. And also, I learned some things, so that's good too.
Nice. Thank you so much. I enjoyed it a lot. And yeah, I'm listening to the podcast, so keep them coming.
Yay. This has been the Ruby on Rails podcast. It was a pleasure talking with Arena. Follow at Evil Martians on X, Mastodon, and LinkedIn. We'd also love to hear from you. If you have a comment about this episode, send an email to comments@therubyonrailspodcast.com. You can include a text comment or attach a file from Voice Memos or Google Recorder, and we'll respond to some of those on a future show. Thanks to Paul, our wonderful editor over Peachtree Sound, for making us sound like professionals. And thank you for listening. You're a gem.
You've been listening to the Ruby on Rails podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded to stay in the loop on Ruby on Rails and open source software. While you're at it, please leave us a review. And thank you for listening.